The Guardian. When I was growing up, meeting someone off the internet was still a weird and risky thing to do. Now, of course, we have our choice of apps that help us find everything from dog sitters to odd jobs, and of course we have tons of dating and hookup sites too. There are also no shortage of articles about how apps are eroding intimacy and leading us all to a seedy buffet of soulless right swipes. But what about the ways emerging tech is actually trying to make it easier to find the person out there who's right for us? Can you reliably have a first date with someone based on the fact that they like the same memes as you? eHarmony is an online dating service. You may know it's been around pretty much since the beginning, since the turn of the millennium. I remember taking surveys and compatibility tests on their websites as a teen, but we heard from them lately. We got a cool email about how they're evolving their algorithm and using the massive amount of survey data they get to judge compatibility in new ways. I got an email about behavior-based matching, real-time processing, compatibility data.
Okay, I have so many questions.
Hey, we have my colleague Elena Cressy in the studio here today to help me speculate about a future where an algorithm can guess my sense of humor and find me someone with the same sense of humor. I'm Lee Alexander. You're listening to Chips with Everything, the digital culture show from The Guardian. And Elena and I have a guest, Steve Carter, who is eHarmony's chief scientist.
Our service is mainly geared towards people who are looking for a successful relationship. So it's not really a hookup site.
I love this successful relationship. Bit of shade there.
Let's dig into that.
Marriage rates in the UK have gone down drastically in the past 10 years. So when we launched, I think it would have been fair to say we were really geared towards people who wanted to get married. But at this point, societal norms in England have very much been leaning towards adopting the idea of long-term partnerships that don't require the sanctification of the state or church. I mean, church rates started to plummet first and marriage rates followed them quickly thereafter in England. So yeah, that's why my tone of voice gets a little cringy when I say people looking for a long-term relationship, because that's not really marriage anymore necessarily in the UK. And that's perfectly well in fitting with what our use of data tries to achieve in terms of the quality of a relationship, not the type of the relationship. But yeah, our side is geared towards people that are looking for a relationship. I mean, that might be for a month or a year or a decade. I mean, I think another thing we're moving away from as a society, or at least I hope we are, is the idea that relationships have to turn into something permanent in order to be a success. That we've been, I know we've been talking a lot in various circles about, isn't one of the problems with the kind of path of relationships that we feel that if it doesn't keep going, it's a failure, and therefore we stay in bad relationships. Great from a research standpoint because I have data on bad relationships that I can use to correlate with data about the two people that say what's making it bad, but not so great in terms of the human experience. So our goal is to help people get in relationships that are going to be good, and that obviously has some age demographic interactions and some previous relationship experience demographics.
Right. So, Elena, do you agree with that? Do you see any kind of value shift in the dating landscape around us?
Well, after my fair share of bad Tinder dates, I'd definitely say so. Look, all I want is a guy who will understand the memes I WhatsApp to him. Is that too much to ask? Is it too much?
I know. So, like, I mean, today people have new goals on the dating market. You know, like, what if rather than wanting to meet your forever or someone, you just want to have fewer bad internet dates or meet people who you actually want to text back or who will at least laugh at your jokes while you're hooking up in a seedy app.
But yeah, joking aside, broadly, yes, there are so many dating apps out there and it feels like you're swimming in options. There's this sense of, well, if this doesn't work out, I guess there are plenty of fish in the sea and you can literally go to plentyoffish.com and find them, although that's the worst one, I think.
I know, I've heard fun things about that. But yeah, Steve says that what people are looking for hasn't changed that much.
I don't think the creation of the Gutenberg press made people want books more. And I don't think the creation of apps such as Scout made people want one-night stands more, right? You've got people moving their enterprises from media to media as new technologies evolve. And I think you're seeing that with the internet. I think you're seeing that certain needs that used to be serviced by the back pages of weekly magazines have moved on to first websites and now apps and vice versa. So yeah, I don't think it's a matter of the needs changing. I think places where the technology has made interesting changes is in what form of media they can put in front of you. And you're definitely seeing that where it used to be very hard to find a picture of someone, now it's almost impossible not to see a picture of someone. And where it used to be very difficult to share video with someone. Now it's like you feel like there's something wrong with you if you don't allow a video of yourself to be shared with someone. So those are the big changes. I think our ability to both control what media and what representations of ourselves are available to others has changed a lot. And our ability to look at media and find out things about others has changed a lot.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. So I've been doing a lot of writing right now on the idea of an avatar, which is to say our representations of ourselves online, and how lots of us are kind of like grooming and building and presenting these ideal versions of ourselves that only exist on Instagram or through Snapchat filters. Do you know what I mean?
I think there's a reason a bunch of these sites now give you the option to link your Instagram to your dating profile. When it comes to online dating and any kind of social media, I think it's even truer still. You want to put your best self forward because your best self is your most attractive self, right?
Right. Everyone knows I don't look as good in real life as I do on my Instagram, but like it's almost not the point anymore. Like maybe we are creating this additional layer of remove by mediating our interactions through digital space. What do you think?
I mean, whether it's true or not, because I think you look lovely.
Oh.
But yeah, whether our online self is better or worse or whatever, if your online self doesn't match up to who you are in real life, then at some point, maybe around date 3 or 4, the other person is going to clock that, right?
Right.
It's going to be something that's going to come up. You can't just be like, hey, look at this sweet filter. Yeah. You can't carry around an Instagram filter with you all the time on every day, much as I wish it.
And there's like this type of person now. There's a friend that everyone has who's really funny on Twitter, and then it's just not in real life. Do you know what I mean?
I know so many people like that, where they're like these bullshy personalities on Twitter, but you meet them in real life and they will stand in the corner and not talk to anyone.
Yeah, like, or your loudest political friend is like the least socially outgoing. It's really funny.
If we're going to talk about the larger universe of social media and online relationships in terms of your Facebook feed and your Twitter and your WhatsApp and your Etsy, and look at the degree to which people are interacting on those media as opposed to interacting with people in the real world, I do think that's a problem. And I'm not alone in thinking that we have a problem in our society, a growing problem in our society, of people actually being more lonely, having less meaningful social interaction with people, and having less deep friendships with the people that we do have social interactions with. And that there's been some research, for example, a very, very esteemed neuropsychologist in America who we've had the luck to work with at eHarmony, named John Cacioppo. Actually, part of his life's work has been looking at loneliness and the neuropsychological effects of loneliness. And there's health outcomes of having no one to share confidence with that are, you know, strictly in terms of like hormones being released in your body and the progression of various physical developments and illnesses. So yeah, I do think there's a downside to social media. I do think, you know, part of it is the lack of intimate social contact with your circle of friends or having a meaningful circle of friends. I don't think it's targeted so much on finding a romantic partner. I think most of the impacts of social media on finding romantic partners has actually been positive in terms of people being able to find others that are at great distance from themselves, which is an especially grave issue for people who are both older and living in smaller communities, right? We've seen lots of relationships occur at eHarmony that are between people that would never have possibly met if it weren't for the internet.
And yet a lot of the interactions that we are doing, whether that's exchanging photos with one another or short-lived videos or swiping in an app like Tinder, maybe that type of thing just taps into our desire to see a lot of faces or to have our attractiveness validated, but it can very quickly get divorced from the goal of finding someone you want to date. Did you like that joke? That
was so good. Do I detect a relationship pun? I would swipe right.
The algorithm said yes.
But yeah, I think that's true. Tinder's like a game now. I actually know people who use it on the loo, but I also know people who have married their Tinder dates. So you can't completely rule out its sort of matchmaking potentials. But what these apps do create is the sense that there's always something better out there. Or if you're shallow, there's always someone better looking. And when you've got all of this at your fingers, it's kind of no wonder that people find it tough to find meaningful relationships in this particular age of online dating.
So now, what are some of the tech sector options that might be able to introduce a different experience? eHarmony described to us it's doing what it calls live humor events to see whether humor can be measured and to prove the hypothesis that people who share the same sense of humor are going to have a better first date. And they tell us that they want to infuse the findings from the humor events back into the eHarmony algorithm. That's its wording, infuse the findings to try to
science.
We'll be infused with science and findings to try to get more scientific matches.
Well, eHarmony started off as a very traditional social behavioral research project being conducted by a clinical psychologist back in 1998, where he, after spending 25 years working with married couples who were in distress, or at least in enough distress to seek a therapist, he was convinced that most of the problems he was facing were based on the fact that people who shouldn't have gotten married, that were basically incompatible, had gotten married. And he could help them by teaching them techniques for being nicer to each other or reframing their difficulties or transferring some of their feelings to others, that he was just wallpapering cracks in the walls, essentially. And wouldn't it be better to build a house that didn't have big cracks in the wall? So he wanted to go out and show that he could take these ideas and create a system that could actually predict which married couples had the attributes necessary to be considered compatible, and then use that model to deliver to singles matches that they'd be more likely to have a successful relationship with. So that's what the first couple of years of our efforts were, basically surveying married couples, doing scale development on the questionnaires that were used, because we had to use new questionnaires so that we would own them, and basically building those predictive models based upon the qualities of relationships among married people that could predict which ones would be happy if they'd started off with this information as singles. Where machine learning came into it was after we'd gotten that product launched in 2000, it quickly became apparent that when you've built a model based on people that have already chosen to get married, it doesn't do a very good job of predicting who's going to find each other attractive. Because no one gets married for the most part unless they find the other partner to be a suitable age and suitably attractive and have some shared interests and stuff like that. So we started using the interaction information on our website, where we were creating, you know, by this point, millions of matches per week, and relating that to the psychometric information we had on our users and then the behavioral information we had on our users, and using machine learning algorithms, because they work with this size data where inferential statistics tend to break down, to create models that would predict who would talk to whom when they were matched on the website. So we were an early adopter of machine learning and an early adopter of cloud computing, as we were dealing with creating a bipartite graph of several billion edges and needing to reduce that in parallel in terms of wanting to avoid having a kind of tipping problem of, if you do this as a serial process based on some other business rule order, you're always going to make the people in the beginning of the line have better matches and those in the end of the line have worse matches. So we had to adopt using the kind of parallel computing architecture of Elastic MapReduce, which Amazon made available in the early 2000s. And so, yeah, so we were a very early adopter of machine learning and cloud computing.
We'll be right back with eHarmony's Steve Carter right after this.
Hey there, Chips fans. We'd like to recommend another great Guardian podcast to you, the award-winning Science Weekly, which is the best place to hear the latest debates in biology, chemistry, physics, and sometimes philosophy. Recent shows explored the breakthrough Starshot initiative, using lasers to propel spherical sails to Alpha Centauri, our closest star system, over 4 light-years away. Also, are the foundations of human reasoning currently exploring a shakeup? And let's look at infant vision during the first 6 months of life. With the Guardian science team and experts from around the world, you're in for a treat. To find out more, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts or find us on your favorite podcasting app. So, Eleni, you were sort of worried about, let's say, a hypothetical situation where you already plan out all of these vectors going in and you're going to have your scientifically ideal first date. Your first question about this was,
where is the romance?
Your concern was kind of that it might take out some of the spontaneity, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not the kind of person who believes in Disney princess-style romances, but I find it hard to get my head around an algorithm figuring out who I'd want to date. I've dated guys who are the absolute opposite of me in every single way. We're talking politics, upbringing, whether or not they like dumb things on the internet. and yet I've still had a really good time. I find it hard to believe an algorithm could predict that kind of romance, you know, where opposites attract.
Yeah, like what about the situations where, you know, you're very different, but you have some common means of coping or you have some background elements in common? So we asked Steve that question.
You know, romance is as romance does. So you are the person who brings romance to your relationship.
Me. Oh, it's all on me.
Oh, it's all on you. It's all on you. And not the, you know, the conveyance that you use to bring you to that romance. We are a tool which allows you to bring as much or little romance to a situation as you naturally would, but within the context of we've selected or we've curated the people that you will see, that you will target your romantic nature at.
Sorry, the idea of targeting my romantic nature.
I've got some strong ideas about how you do that. But basically that you can do that with a group of people that have been quantitatively chosen to have a higher probability of leading to a successful relationship if a relationship indeed forms. Hopefully we don't take the romance out. We just mean the romance leads to a longer and happier interval of time for that romance to exist. We're optimizing for long-term success right now. I would say one of the most interesting things that we're working on right now for the future is that we are working to optimize for the first date success. So in between being delivered a match online and having some algorithm that chose those matches from the, you know, the thousands of pairings possible to the 10 that we think you're most likely to talk to today and who are most likely to talk to you, then if you choose to have a romance with them and they choose to have a romance with you and that escalates, having a good chance of that being a successful relationship. Well, there's a lot of green between those two things. One aspect of that is getting you to actually have successful communication on the site. Well, we recently rebuilt our communication user experience to try to amplify and accelerate the process by which people say things to each other and get the ball rolling.
99% match with someone, but it doesn't mean something if you never send them a message.
Right. So we've always had a very staged communication system based on trying to get you to really illuminate the things that are very important to you. But we've moved that to a more... Since we're more confident in our models now than we were when we launched, we've moved that to a more, say something to them, say something personal, get this into two-way communication quickly to try to get more people getting to that first date. But now the next step down that funnel is that first date. How can we help you have a good first date? We know from our own research that people don't tend to make decisions in those first meetings that seem to be very strongly related to long-term compatibility. So nothing that we're measuring already to create the long-term compatibility models is very likely to have anything to do with the quality of that first date. And actually, there's some good academic research out there too right now using the Big Five personality profile, which is part of what we use, which shows that, yeah, the Big Five personality factors aren't really good predictors of compatibility for a first date. So we've been looking around for something which will be, and what we've hit on based on what the majority of our users have said over the years is the person's sense of humor. If we can measure what type of sense of humor, what style of sense of humor a person has, that will provide insight into what person they will do well with on a first date.
Optimizing for success. Elena, what do you think of when you think of optimizing the success of your dating life?
I mean, I'm starting to think maybe I should join eHarmony and report back.
This is not an eHarmony advertorial piece. We just thought it was an interesting occasion to talk about the ways that we can combine tech and data. I think it is. It's kind of an interesting thing to study, though.
Well, right now we're requiring people to go through an external study where they watch a series of about 40 short videos. And those videos have been shown to illuminate 9 statistically distinct forms of humor. And those forms of humor in our early data so far have been shown to have significant statistical ability to predict when someone wants to have a second date with someone.
Wow.
So we are in the future going to be incorporating into the eHarmony product a humor assessment based on memes. Some people are going to find some things funny and some people aren't. That is going to be leveraged to predict who has a good social interaction with someone on a first date and who doesn't. So right now we're using a set of memes that seems to illuminate about 7 different dimensions with various degrees of like statistical reliability and uniqueness. But over time, because memes are very, very fast and fun to look at, we're hoping to have an experience on eHarmony where when you're done looking at your matches, or there's no new matches to look at, or when you're bored at work, you'll hopefully go on and you'll go through a couple dozen memes and rate how funny you think they are. And so there's this continually updating battery of questions and what we would call a question bank from an item response theory standpoint, so that we can be creating information about kind of the item functioning of these different stimuli and know, hey, here's a new type of humor, which may be really all around a specific theme, but it's culturally binned. Only, you know, some people in a certain age group or even a subset within that age group get it. But if we use that in terms of recommending to you who you would have a good first date with, we're going to have a good chance of being right.
So this is where Elena and I got really excited, because we love memes. Actually, meme compatibility, very important.
I think it's quite important. It is tough when a guy doesn't like the same memes as you. I had to explain what me IRL was to a guy the other day. He didn't know what me IRL meant.
Oh, that's awful.
Because technically I was dating a Victorian ghost or whatever. I have no idea. And I was like, yeah, it's like me in real life. And then you put like a dumb picture next to it and it's meant to be funny. And he was like, I don't get it.
Wow. I don't see how you could actually be with someone like that.
I mean, it's surprising. It's quite nice, because those people tend to be kind of chill and not like in the internet all the time. And that's what's quite nice. It balances out.
Maybe you're looking for someone who actually doesn't get involved in the cultural dynamics of your memes and shitposting existence online.
If you are a premier shitposter, email me on elena.cressy@theguardian.com. Then maybe, no, I'm kidding. Please don't do that.
I'm not kidding. I think you should send her your best ones. Like, I would probably feel a very deep affinity for someone who posted like a lot of Appalachian Revolutionary opossum pictures, but like, don't send me a cheeseburger cat and spell cheeseburger with a Z.
No. Any dogs, and I'm fine with that.
Anyway, back to the eHarmony meme quiz.
We wanted to know a lot more about the eHarmony meme quiz, didn't we? It's very exciting.
Well, right now, there's about 44 memes in that part of the study. And there are memes that don't seem funny at all to people in the company, but that have they share covariance with other memes, that they represent a reliable statistical construct, right, which is basically defined by covariance across different questions. And when you find that covariance then predicts something that you want, which in this case is people reporting that I want to go out with this person again, then you've got something worth using, whether you can actually put a label on it or not.
Yeah, from a data science standpoint, how do you measure the success of matches? Because, you know, when people go on a dating site to meet someone, and once they do, they leave. What's the follow-up procedure? How are you studying how successful these matches are?
Right. Well, for now, we're taking the traditional kind of behavioral scientist approach with this sense of humor first date compatibility study. We're doing speed dating trials, where we're using as a simulacrum of a first date people having these 5-minute interactions with each other and then filling out a form. But going forward, we're hoping to have a big green button on the site that people come back and click when they've gone out with someone, or on the app, and get them to tell us how those dates went. You know, in the past, it's been rather hard to track when people have engaged in the kind of communication that will lead to a date. And it's always been a challenge to send someone an email saying, hey, we saw you asked this person to go out with you last week. Did you go out with them? Without seeming like we're creepy stalkers. So we've had this balance to try to strike between following up with people and not being intrusive in their lives. But we're hoping now that people are getting so engaged online, and again, because we're going to hope to have this experience that is inherently entertaining for people that we really haven't had before, we're hoping that we'll be able to get more feedback on how those dates go.
So with all this data gathering, a lot of it on very personal matters, obviously people do have privacy concerns.
Yeah, I mean, we have basically privacy concerns are everywhere now. Like, you know, we thought Orwell's Big Brother would be a network of surveillance cameras, but Big Brother is actually big data, collecting intel on every move we make, on everything that we do and don't want.
Can we just talk about how good a line Big Data is Big Brother? That's a really good line.
Thank you. I think I came up with it. If I didn't, let me know. But yeah, I'd be proud to originate that phrase.
You're right, though. It's like how you can look at something on Amazon 1 minute and then the next have it advertised on your Facebook. It's scary.
Yeah. And especially in the dating world, where some people do expect a certain degree of privacy. You know, there's all kinds of reasons people are looking for matches and they might not want to put that much of themselves out there up front.
So privacy concerns are an interesting question. We gather a lot of psychometric information about people, which we use for our matching, but it's completely anonymized in our system, so that even if someone did hack into our system because they thought that somehow they could use that psychometric information to, I guess, blackmail someone or figure out their consumer habits, perhaps, they wouldn't be able to attach it to any PII. these databases are completely separated. And then the nice thing is this isn't the type of information that database hackers are after, right? They're after consumer information, your email address, your phone number, your address, which they can then sell right off. That's a commodity. And then if they can somehow get your credit card number on top of that, well, then they can just straight up rip you off, right? That's not information that we have any responsibility for storing. We're using the same type of best practices, offsite, transactional-based facilities for that stuff. Personally, I am extremely optimistic and hopeful that we're going to be able to start pushing people to have more first dates by being able to show them that they will have better first dates and to make that experience, that onboarding into that concept, be intrinsically entertaining and therefore have them basically be imbued with this positive affect and feeling about the potential of the first date and really get them offline. My hopes and aspirations for the future of online dating is for it to be more offline dating, because that's where the real, you know, important social human interaction happens.
Right. So ideally, some of this data can just be used to help that first move be a little more well-chosen. Maybe you won't have to get so many DMs escalating in aggression from men who live in another town or who are holding the giant fish they caught. Have you experienced that?
Yes. Yeah. All of the above.
All of the above. If data like this were applied toward the purpose of just trying to help you have a good first date, not to like find your forever person or close you off to other options, what are you convinced? Are you sold on this?
I love the idea of getting better dates. It sounds really great. But I'm just not convinced that algorithms can solve this particular problem. All the calculations on the planet aren't gonna stop some random dude from sending me a dick pic. That's all I'm saying. It's just not gonna stop the fuckboys.
Yeah, so basically, no AI Cupid just yet. Let's work instead on how to prevent ourselves from getting unwanted dick pics.
That would be nice.
We'd love to have the tech industry solve that problem.
Thank you, tech.
Well, that is all we have for Chips with Everything this week. Thank you so much to eHarmony Chief Scientist Steve Carter for coming into our studio and helping us think some of these issues through. We've also had my colleague and friend Elena Cressy in the studio. I'm your host, Lee Alexander, and my producer is the wonderful Ian Chambers. If you like Chips with Everything, you can subscribe to us, as well as to lots of other great Guardian podcasts on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. As usual, I have to lovingly exhort you to leave us a nice rating and review. If you like what we've been doing with the show, it really does help more people find us. If you have a digital culture story for us, please get in touch at guardianchips.com. Thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you next week.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.